Hey, guess what? There is a YouVersion live event for this, and you might want it today because we're going to be looking at three different passages of Scripture. You know, we're talking about Palm Sunday. The picture on the screen behind me is a picture of Jerusalem. It's looking down from the Mount of Olives, and you look onto the city from there. You can see in that picture, just on probably 20% in on the left there in the middle, is the Dome of the Rock. That is where the temple would have been. The Temple Mount is there, and Jesus would have seen this kind of a view. The roads going down are naturally twisting and turning because going straight up and down a hill is a lot of work for a donkey or a human or any other animal. And you go down into the Kidron Valley there, you come up the other side, and there you are in Jerusalem. Scripture tells us that Jesus took this route when he was coming in on Palm Sunday to be welcomed as the King of Kings. And then later that week, the crowd turned on him, and you know the story from there. What I want to talk to you about today is the heart of Jesus. I want to talk to you about the compassionate heart of Jesus. And I really want to begin by asking you kind of a soul-searching question. And the question is this: are there times when you have looked at your heart and felt kind of troubled about how uncaring you have become? Do you understand what I mean by that? Are there times you look into your heart and you realize, I have kind of been desensitized to the harshness of the world that is around me? I think if we take reflective moments, which, by the way, are far and few between in our hectic lives, but I think if we take a moment of quietness and just think before God, am I as sensitive and as caring as I once was, that some of us might say, boy, I don't know that I really am. And it's no wonder. I mean, think of the world to which we are exposed. Think of the media that we're exposed to. Have you ever watched old television shows? One of the shows I watch regularly is The Rifleman. I watch him every Saturday, at least one episode. I set my DVR to get all they record, you know, because I love that old show. It's interesting to watch those black and white shows and see how they portray violence. When something happens, often you don't see, you never see blood. And you don't see the actual event occurring. You hear the clunk of a guy that got hit over the head. A great example of that is Alfred Hitchcock's classic movie, Psycho, the black and white one, you know. You didn't really get to see a lot of the violence there. You did see the shadow of the violence, but you didn't see the real thing. And part of that was because at that time in cinema history, we were kind of shielding you from that. As a society, we didn't expose you to that sort of thing. Contrast that with things you see in prime time today. It's a whole different kind of a world. In fact, I would guess that the movie The Godfather, which caught an R rating, I think it was 1974 when it was released, I would guess that that Godfather movie could be shown right on television today without any editing at all. Because we live in a world, and I'm not saying this to say, look how bad Hollywood is. That's not what I'm about today. I'm here to say that you and I have been exposed to that over and over and over again. And that very exposure probably has made some changes in our hearts that has made us less compassionate than we used to be. All of that really combines to make our generation one that is a little less shocked than generations that preceded us. Worse, it can actually make us discompassionate. I don't know about you, but I have learned to turn the channel as soon as I see images of suffering refugees. I have learned to flip over very quickly when I hear the compassionate agencies wanting me to save the children or whatever it is. Get away from that. I don't want to see that. Other times, and I think this is even worse, I can just look at it and not feel even an inkling to do anything about it. I become discompassionate. Now, I will say this to you, that there are still things that move us in this life that we live. Sometimes, and you're going to see a theme here as the message progresses, sometimes it's the circumstances we see people in and the outcomes of those circumstances. This is not a children's movie at all, but I would imagine some of you have watched a movie called Slumdog Millionaire. It doesn't matter who reviews that movie always gets high reviews. And when I see this critic and this critic and this critic and this critic and this critic all agreeing that that was a great movie, I think there must be something about that movie because those guys are so opinionated they can't agree with one another for anything. You know? What was it about that movie that made that movie so touching and so meaningful to so many people? And I would say the answer is that there is still something inside of us that when we see people who are born into unfortunate circumstances, it moves our heart. And in the movie, when those unfortunate circumstances actually turn out to make the person successful, that moves our heart even more. Because we really still today, there's a remnant of compassion in us that when we see someone in a bad spot, it moves our heart. There's a second thing that moves our heart, and that is people. People in general can move our hearts. You can ask any teacher, and he will tell you stories of students. Some students who he didn't give much hope to. Boy, that kid's about as smart as a box of rocks, you know? And look, he turned out to be doing really well. He has a wife and kids and a good job. That story of those people moves my heart. Other times, you can see children who maybe really could have made something out of themselves and turned to drugs or ended up in prison or just became a bum. And when we see that, that moves our heart. We feel like, ah, that is so hard. Or we see the person that is incredibly musically talented, much like our own musicians that we had here this morning, but we see one that's really musically talented, and we can see that he's going the wrong direction, that fame is really affecting him negatively, and we know we're gonna watch a rockumentary on his life 20 years from now, and it'll end with the phrase, "It was a tragic death." When we see those things and hear those things, those still move our hearts. Even watching the people involved with the incident over the Swiss Alps recently. It moves our hearts when we see that great loss of life in that plane crash and the craziness of it all. There's a third thing that moves our hearts, and that is a hopelessness that different people encounter. And you cannot turn on the news and watch the news for more than 10 minutes before you feel this sense of hopelessness for our world, especially when it comes to the Middle East. I mean, when I think about having the office of President of the United States, I think you should be disqualified from having that office simply on the basis of wanting it because you must be insane to want that job. Because the situation internationally, it simply looks hopeless. So hopeless sometimes that it's even hard for us to imagine any change coming about there. And when my daughter posts on her Facebook a picture of a village in Yemen, a place that is close to her heart, she writes these words, "Please join us as we ask God to protect our Yemeni friends and enable our expatriate friends to escape." You know what expatriates are, right? An expatriate is someone who is not a citizen of that country. They're visiting that country. They may be working for BP Oil. They may be working as IWs, whatever. "Please join us as we ask God to protect our Yemeni friends and enable our expatriate friends to escape. We are brokenhearted as we talk to our friends about the pain they are experiencing." And I immediately type, I'm the second guy on the list there, I immediately type, "praying, dot, dot, dot." But as I prayed, I thought, it's really hopeless. Why am I even praying? And when I sense that kind of hopelessness, it moves my heart. It twists my heart in a way that I don't even know how to explain, and I don't know what resolution there is for it. But here is what I know. I know that it is not a bad twist. It's a familiar kind of a twist. We'll talk about that in a little bit. I want to say to you that these kinds of things are the kinds of things that move the heart of Jesus. And what I would like to do is unfold this concept to you in three episodes from some of Jesus' last days that were leading up to the cross. If you think of time in this Holy Week, right before Palm Sunday, maybe a few weeks before, but a short time before, Jesus has been in Bethany, and he was at the tomb of a man named Lazarus, and he raised him from the dead. That made his fame skyrocket. And then we come to Sunday, to the Palm Sunday event, when he stands and looks on Jerusalem and says, "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, I would have liked to have gathered you like a hen gathers its chicks," and he wept. Then, later, he is at the end of the week, it's Friday, and he's on the cross. And he cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me?" And shortly thereafter, gives up his spirit and dies. I want to look at those three episodes in Jesus' life. So turn your Bibles to John 11 for the first one. And what I want you to see is how the circumstances, the people, and the hopelessness were things that moved Jesus' heart. I want you to see the circumstances in John 11, because here we have Jesus living in a broken world, and the brokenness of that world is what moves his heart. As the text unfolds, he's actually confronted by this concept of death in a deeply personal way. So here in John 11, we're going to begin reading at verse 30. John 11, verse 30. We're going to read about 15 verses here. Follow along as I move through this text quickly. Now Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. You understand, he's headed up to Bethany. Lazarus is dead. Verse 31. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house comforting him, notice how quickly she got up and went out. They followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see, Lord, they replied. Jesus wept. The Jews said, see how he loved him. But some of them said, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying? Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Take away the stone, he said. But Lord, said Martha, the sister of the dead man, by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been there 4 days. Jesus said, did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I know that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe you sent me. And when he had said this, Jesus called out in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, take off those grave clothes and let him go. Now in the middle of this story, there's a tiny verse. I memorized this verse for Mrs. Travis when I was in primary Sunday school class. She said, if you memorize a verse for every letter of the alphabet, Steve, I will give you a prize. I'm all about prizes. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J. Jesus wept. 2 words. Got that one. Shortest verse in the Bible. That's how I memorized it. John 11, 35. Jesus wept. But why did he weep? I mean, what are we looking at this verse for? Jesus wept. Is he weeping? The Jews thought he is weeping because, man, he really loved Lazarus. Wow, maybe that's why he's weeping. Lazarus is dead and he's going to miss him. You know, that's not true, right? Because Jesus intended, even before he got there, Jesus intended to raise him from the dead. Didn't I tell you that if you believe, you would see the glory of God? That is not the man who doesn't think this guy's going to be breathing again in a few minutes. It is a man who knows he is going to raise him from the dead. He's not crying for the reasons that those gathered there. Some suggest, and I have heard people suggest, he's crying because of their lack of faith. Why didn't they raise him from the dead? But Jesus didn't generally cry for lack of faith. Oh, you evil and perverse generation, how long will I put up with you? That's generally his response to a lack of faith. He rebukes it. He's not crying because of their lack of faith. The long and the short of it is, I think in these circumstances of life where Jesus sees his friends, Mary, Martha, all of their friends gathered around there, he realizes in that broken world that there is an experience that comes with the circumstances of death that you can't just read about in a book. You really can't even sit on a throne on high and know what it feels like. You have to come and be in the middle of it to really taste how awful death is. And he's there. He's at the first funeral that lasted the whole way to the end. Because Jesus had this tendency to interrupt funerals, you know. Whether it was Jairus, the synagogue ruler's daughter, or the child of the widow of Nain, he raised him from the dead. But he didn't this time. And now he is personally experiencing the aftermath of death. And it brings him to tears. it moves his heart. Do you remember your first funeral? Yours was probably worse than mine. But mine was no picnic. I had never been to a funeral before, and now I'm 16 years of age. And a friend of mine, who was a Vietnamese kid that we had taken into our church family, his family lived with our pastor. He was 16, I was 16. He would come over and ride my pony, and we would ride motorcycle together. I would go over, and it was very difficult for his father. His mother was not there. It was just him, his two siblings, and his father. It was very difficult for his father to make the adjustment to American life. And so he chose to end it. And left a 16-year-old boy, a 13-year-old girl, and a 10-year-old son behind. I can remember sitting in that funeral service, my first ever. I sat toward the back, and I looked, and I saw those kids, my friend. It was nothing like I had anticipated. Now I'm in the middle of it. It's very different. You know what I decided? I will never go to a funeral again. How ironic is that, right? Since some funeral homes have me on speed dial these days. That's what's happening with Jesus. He knows what a funeral is like. He knows what death is like. He's God. He knows everything. But now he is in the midst of it. And when you are in the midst of someone else's circumstances who are living in a broken world, it is an extremely painful place to be. And it moves the heart of Jesus. It moves the heart of Jesus. The circumstances of life in a broken world move the heart of Jesus, move them all the way to the cross. Second, something that moves Jesus' heart is the choices that broken people tend to make. Turn to Luke chapter 19. Luke chapter 19. Wow, those of you with the YouVersion Live event, you feel pretty slick, huh? Text is right there in front of you. Luke chapter 19. 20 years ago, a celebrity psychologist wrote a book called 10 Stupid Things Women Do to Mess Up Their Lives. I looked up that book online and looked through the table of contents and realized women are still doing them 2 decades later. We do stupid things. Men do equally stupid things. It's not like we're any smarter. I think we're dumber for the most part, you know? And it's kind of funny sometimes, and other times it's kind of heartbreaking, the things people do to mess up their life. And you see Jesus' heart being broken on Palm Sunday because as he pauses there, going into the city, approaching Jerusalem, I think he has one of those moments when he just thinks back over the past 3 years, and maybe he even thinks back to Eden. And he thinks of human beings and the bad choices that they make. Listen to what he says in chapter 19 of Luke, verse 41. We're just going to read 4 verses here. Luke 19:41, it says, as he approached Jerusalem, he saw the city, and here it is. He wept over it and said, if you, even you, had known on this day what would bring you peace, but now it is hidden from your eyes. The days will come upon you when your enemies will build an embankment against you and encircle you and hem you in on every side. They will dash you to the ground, you and your children within your walls. They will not leave one stone on another because you did not recognize the time of God's coming to you. And we know that happened, right? Titus rolling into Jerusalem in AD 70 was just one part of a full-scale disassembly of the nation of Israel. It began in Gabla, up at the north, and it came the whole way down through Galilee, the whole way through Jerusalem, the whole way down. It ended with Masada. And if you've never seen the movie Masada that was on network television 30 years ago, just go get it. Get on Netflix, whatever you do, go get it. That's where it ended. It's the dissolution of an entire people because of bad choices they made. Bad, bad choices. Why is Jesus weeping here? Is he weeping because they're rejecting him? Yeah, maybe a little. It's bigger than that. Is he weeping because of the destruction that's going to happen? Even their children within their walls, you betcha, that was part of it. But even bigger than that, I think that as Jesus looks at Jerusalem, he sees humankind and he says, oh, you stubborn human beings. You have made such bad choices again and again and again. And those bad choices move Jesus' heart. Move his heart further into the city. Move his heart to the Garden of Gethsemane. Move his heart to say, Peter, put down your sword, and move him right to the cross. because he sees that their terrible choices make essential his death on their behalf. And it is his heart of compassion that moves him down that road. People's bad choices, that moves the heart of Jesus. There's one more thing that I want to share with you that moves the heart of Jesus, and this is going to be seen in Matthew 27. So turn to Matthew 27. It's the last time I'll make you change the page. You're going to be on verse 45 or so there. Matthew 27, 45. Jesus isn't crying this time, but he does cry out. He's not weeping, but he is grieving, and he's on the cross as he does it. This is Matthew's account of the event I want to share with you. You have Jesus hanging on the cross, and he says, well, look at verse 45 of Matthew 27. From noon until 3 in the afternoon, darkness came over all the land. He's been hanging there since 9 in the morning. About 3 in the afternoon, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani? Which means, my God, why have you forsaken me? When some of those standing there heard the sound, they said, he's calling Elijah. And immediately they ran and got a sponge, filled it with vinegar, wine vinegar, put it on a staff, and offered it to Jesus to drink. The rest said, now leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes to save him. And when Jesus cried out again in a loud voice, he gave up his spirit. My God, why have you forsaken me? I got to tell you, when I read Matthew and I see he puts the Aramaic in there, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, I think, I don't know what that means. So he helps me out and he says, that means, my God, why have you forsaken me? And I'm like, I don't know what that means. Why is Jesus saying that? This is the most disquieting thing Jesus says. What is up with that? And those very words have caused some to say, well, you know, Jesus is really saying, where did I go wrong? Wrong. Jesus isn't saying that. Here's what's happening there. First, Jesus is identifying himself as the one the psalmist is writing of, because the psalmist speaks of that, and that psalm is messianic. But second, here's what is going on there. Jesus is expressing the despair that all of us feel when we feel like, I just can't get my act together. And I never will. From the homeless guy who's addicted to drugs and just can't stop using it, to the guy who just can't seem to treat his wife the right way because everything he says is wrong, not just because she says it's wrong, but he knows God well it's wrong. My God, when am I ever going to get this right? And that heart of despair is what Jesus is feeling as he's hanging there on the cross. He's feeling that because he is carrying all of our sins. He's not just carrying our sins. In 2 Corinthians, the Bible says in chapter 5, verse 21, God made him who had no sin to be sin for us, so we might become the righteousness of God. We sing that, right? He became sin, who knew no sin, that we might become his righteousness. Love's so amazing. He cries out that way because he has become our sin, and he feels the hopelessness and despair and alienation from God that all of us feel from time to time. And his heart is moved. He is not just crying out because he's saying, this really stinks to have this stuff here. I believe he is crying out because he is saying, so this is what it is. This is what it is to be a son of Adam and a daughter of Eve. Oh, I had watched this from the throne of heaven, but knowing what it is, that moves the heart of God. That moves the heart of God. His heart's moved by our circumstances. His heart is moved by dumb decisions we make. His heart is moved by the sense of despair each of us feel from time to time. You know, as we move from this Palm Sunday into the week that is ahead of us, what would it be like if we let the very things that move the heart of Christ move our own heart? What would that look like? What would that feel like? What would that accomplish? What would that do? I just want to ask you to give some thought to these things. And here's the theme again. You know what's coming? Three more points that are going to be the same as the subpoints of the last two major points. We're going to talk about circumstances, we're going to talk about people, and we're going to talk about despair. May I ask you this week to look with compassion on people who are in bad circumstances? May I ask you to do that? The heart of Jesus was so moved when he saw what the circumstances were like to be at a funeral that had not been interrupted with a raising of the dead. He saw what those circumstances were like close up and personal. And he allowed those circumstances to move his heart. That might be a pretty cool thing for you and me to do. It would probably be good for us when we see the news or read it on our phones to see the people there as human beings. Real life humans with real life hopes and dreams and real life problems. It would not even hurt us to see them as victims of circumstance that we are not encountering. It would be good for you and me to see those who are maybe struggling financially as being people just like us. They maybe weren't born into the same family that I was born into. It would be good for you and me to see that guy that doesn't seem to know right from wrong as a lost sheep. I've transitioned in my thinking. I can remember in my younger Christian days when there was someone who was behaving poorly, whether it was the things they were saying, the jokes they were telling, the language they were using, I used to see them like, stop it, I just want to get away from them. And somewhere along the way, God put me into their circumstances so that now I can kind of imagine what it might be like to have grown up as they grow up. And just, what does God say about the people of Nineveh? They don't know their right hand from their left. Because they were born in Nineveh. What would it be like if you and I looked at the circumstances of others and let our heart be moved by compassion and as a result? I think it was because she grew up in poverty in Scotland and then moved to the United States. You got to understand, I never realized this until just a few years ago. My mom, this is who I'm speaking of, growing up in Scotland, my mom moved from the slums of Scotland to the slums of Buffalo, New York, and it was stepping up 100 miles economically. She would tell you that. In fact, she would say, I did not grow up in the slums. I've done research. She grew up in the slums of Buffalo, New York. Probably because she had experienced that degree of poverty, my mother would frequently say to the four of us, never forget to be thankful that you were born where you were born. Never forget to be thankful for the circumstances you find yourself in. Because not everyone was born in the United States of America. And have a little compassion. Have a little compassion toward those who were not. And so, when I see people in the news, whether it's someone who's in a war zone with terrorism all around him, or whether it's someone who is in extreme poverty, carrying filthy water on her head so that her family has something to drink, I remember my mom's words. We are blessed to have been born where we have been born. And I want to nurture within myself a heart of compassion to people who are in difficult circumstances, whether it's the Middle East or Africa or Clearfield County. Doesn't matter. What would it be like if we allowed our heart to be moved by the very thing that Jesus allowed his heart to be moved by? It's Holy Week. Look at people in difficult circumstances. Let it move your heart. Don't turn away. Don't turn away. Look at it. And second, may I suggest that this Holy Week you look with compassion at people who have made bad choices. People mess up. They made their bed, let them lie in it. No, let's not do that, okay? Let's look with compassion at people who have made bad choices. Jesus, as he's coming in Jerusalem, when he pauses on that way and weeps, he is doing it because he knows every mother's son and mother's daughter in that city has made bad choices. And that moves his heart. Jesus is the kind of person who, when he sees someone making a terrible decision, he can show them mercy, even though their decisions are going to cost him personally. Not everybody would do that. Some people have this overdeveloped sense of justice. I've had that. Justice that says they need to pay and they need to pay dearly. Right? Jesus didn't do that. He looked with compassion on people that made bad choices. Listen, though, that doesn't mean he enabled them. Right? He didn't keep on enabling them to make the same bad choice again and again. Nor does it mean that he didn't confront them. Neither do I condemn you. Now, cut it out. Leave your life of sin. It doesn't mean that he didn't give them every opportunity to change. He did all those things, but he loved them as well. I wonder, can we do something similar to that? Can we do something? When we see people reaping the consequences of their bad choices, can we say, there, except for the grace of God, go I. There, but for the grace of God, goes Steve Shields. This Holy Week, let's begin to be more caring, and let's look at people who've made bad choices, and let's let that move our hearts. Third, you know what the third one is, right? You've seen these three subpoints throughout this sermon. Look compassion on those who are struggling with despair. On those who are trying to have hope and finding it difficult to have hope. Jesus understands the need for hope. His cry from the cross speaks of a heart that is touching on despair. My God, why have you forsaken me? And that despair rightly belonged to you and me. But he felt it as he carried it. And having experienced that despair, Jesus is a hope giver. He lifts people out of despair. I want to be that guy. I want to lift people out of despair. I want to help them not to give up. I want to show them how to stick with it. I can remember when I started ministry. I remember the early days of ministry were so unbearably stressful to me. I must have been horrible to live with. And I can remember, I could not believe the amount of work that I had to do. Writing three sermons a week. Not one, not two, but three a week. And it took me, in those days, 20 hours to write a sermon. Do the math. And on top of that, the social expectations. Pastor, can you come over for dinner? Bring your wife. Bring that two-week-old baby with you, too. We kind of like to see him. Picking hymns. Oh, thank God for a wife that after I picked the same three hymns 4 months in a row, said, I'll start picking the hymns. You know? Preparing a bulletin, teaching Sunday school class, visiting people, nursing home, writing funerals, doing counseling that I had no idea how to do, leading a youth group. I was stressed like Kramer never thought of being stressed. I was standing in line in the dining hall at Mahaffey Camp, and Joe, a pastor just a little bit older than me, who's kind of a social guy, he was introducing me to people. And the first person he introduced me to, he said, Steve, I want you to meet this guy. I don't even know who he introduced me to. Here's what I remember about this incident. Joe said to that guy, Steve is serving at one of our churches in Bradford, or at our church in Bradford. He is doing a great job there. What? My head is barely above the surface of the water. He believes I'm doing a good job? Wow. Maybe I am. Maybe I'll make it. And I know he didn't even know what he was doing, but because of the nature of his heart, Pastor Joe sensed my need and injected hope into my soul. Do you understand that? I want to be Pastor Joe. He's like Jesus. I want to be like Jesus. I want to be one who understands the despair that others go through so I can bring hope to them. What if we looked with compassion toward those needing encouragement and just took the time to give it to them? I've stood on the Mount of Olives where this picture's taken from. I took that picture. When you stand on the Mount of Olives, you're not in a box canyon. Well, of course I'm not. I'm on top of a mountain. How could I be in a box canyon? Here's why I'm telling you what's obvious. There are a lot of other directions Jesus could have walked. A lot of other places he could have gone. But he didn't. He went into the city all the way to the cross. What took him there? His compassionate heart. And he has never looked back and said, what was I thinking? Being compassionate. He made the right choice. I want to pray that you and I would be men and women of compassion as the musicians are coming to the platform. If you're comfortable doing so, let's stand together and we'll pray.